Here we go.
Welcome to BP WrigleyCast, the Cubs podcast that has always prioritized location, movement, and then velocity. And that brings us to the main topic of today's podcast. Big news in the Cubs world as the Cubs go and make a big trade to strengthen their bullpen. They bring in Aroldis Chapman from the Yankees in exchange for Gleyber Torres, Adam Warren, Billy McKinney, and Rashad Crawford. And before I go any further, I am joined by our regular crew, Isaac, Ryan, and Joel. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Hey, Carlos.
So we want to split this podcast up into kind of, I mean, what we're going to be talking about mostly is Chapman. It's a big deal. It's what everybody's talking about today. So we'll tackle kind of the trade, first of all, the move, the players involved, more on the baseball side of it. And then obviously we'll address kind of the issues around Chapman, his history and what that means to the team, if it's going to affect them at all, et cetera. So with that, let's jump right into the trade. Just first off, general reactions. Like the trade, don't like the trade. We're going to get into more nuance than that, but I'm curious to hear what you guys think. Ryan, what was your first impression when you heard about this being when it was a done deal and the players involved?
Well, I think I would have to do it justice by walking you through my stages of grief on this trade. And that is, initially when I heard Gleyber Torres is out of the lineup, and people speculating that it could be for Chapman, I thought, no way. That doesn't make any sense. And then, when I heard there were other players involved, I thought, well, no way. I don't understand. This doesn't make sense. And then it was a rumor that maybe there was an extension involved, and I thought, baseball standpoint alone, that makes more sense. I can get behind that. And then, no, there's no extension. It's just, you know, the Cubs' number one prospect or number two prospect, depending on how you look at it, plus Billy McKinney, which, whatever, and a fourth outfielder, not that big of a deal. And Adam Warren, which he got off to a bad start in his Cubs career, but still, you know, a guy who has a track record of being a good pitcher, and then another guy I've never heard of for 2 months plus playoffs of Aroldis Chapman when I think we have a pretty strong history that we can look at from 2016. The Cubs are actually pretty good once you get a lead past the sixth inning of holding it to the end of the game. So what you're really doing here is making up for bad middle relief, and I feel like instead of going out and giving up your farm system for Aroldis Chapman to improve in middle relief, maybe you just go get a middle reliever. So, on the whole, I am not impressed with this trade, and that is to put it lightly.
Well, I'll chime in real quick just because kind of those stages that you talked about, there was an email going around with some guys from work, and they were talking about this trade, and I chimed in with, there's no way this is the package because, you know, we just had a value check on Aroldis Chapman in the offseason, and it was nowhere near this. And so when it was finally a done deal, part of me was also kind of not believing it. But when it was confirmed, I thought, okay, well, gosh, the first thing I thought of was the Yankees played this masterfully. They gave up very little to acquire him. They didn't have to pay him for the first however many days he was suspended. And now they get to trade him for the Cubs' top prospect in Gleyber Torres. A couple pieces that may or may not play a role, and then an extra throw-in guy. You know, that's pretty good, I feel like. And as from the Cubs' point of view, what it says to me is it's a bold move, right? This is the front office saying, boom, we just went and got the best reliever available, and we just put him right into that closer's role. Everybody bumps down. It's hard to make a case for the team not being better.
Yeah, you know, we talked last night. It's funny, Carlos, we had the podcast and then technical difficulties ruined it, and so we decided to scrap it. And so now this is the post-Chapman podcast 2.0.
That was me hacking into it so you guys couldn't do it while I was there.
Well, it worked. Congratulations.
Call me Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot.
So I was pretty down on it last night, but I've come around a little bit on it, and I see more of the logic, and I see certainly Ryan's point that, you know, when the Cubs had a lead past the seventh inning, they actually, JD just talked about on the broadcast, and I can't remember, but it was like something and one. So yes, they're
55 and one.
There you go. The end of their bullpen was clearly not a huge problem, but I was thinking about it, and I think that, you know, in addition to kind of an intangible intimidation factor, which obviously you can't quantify, and that's just a thought. People talked about what a game changer Chapman is. I was thinking about, you know, you look at what the Royals did, and now the Cubs have Strope, Rodon, and Chapman, and so you can this takes a lot of pressure off the starting rotation. So Arrieta doesn't have to be perfect for seven or eight innings. If Madden, and I know we've talked about this in the past, and Isaac, you've expressed a lot of dismay about how Madden doesn't pull the pitchers early enough, but maybe this leads him to pull the guys earlier because now he can get into that bullpen. And so instead of going to, you know, Travis Wood and Clayton Richard and C.J. Edwards, now you've got Strope and Rodon and Chapman, and so it kind of moves everyone down a notch, and so I feel like that's a benefit. And you know, we're looking at the pack. He's like 4-for-1. Wow, that's pretty big. But if you look at it, it's, you know, McKinney is kind of he's apparently going to be a decent hitter, but he's the fourth outfielder at best. Warren, you know, I had high hopes. I know we all had high hopes for him, but it wasn't working out so far. Torres hurts, but you know, you're gonna have to give something to get something, and I don't know. I'm not as down on the trade as I was. I see the logic. I'm seeing, you know, as we're talking, the White Sox are beating the Cubs 4-2, and I'm a little more I'm starting to think maybe it'd be nice if they got another bat in there too, because Montero and Hayward are kind of two black holes in the offense. But as far as the pitching goes, I'm feeling better about this than I was yesterday.
Yeah, a couple of things I wanted to address there before we get Isaac's take on this, and that is, I just can't get my head around dealing one of your biggest assets. And before I go further, maybe I should clarify that. A 19-year-old who is a shortstop, which means he could play anywhere on the field, who is in high A, where he's in a league nearly, the average age is nearly 4 years older than he is, and it's a pitcher's league, and he has nearly an 800 OPS in that league. I mean, the guy who is a special hitter, and he's already in the, you know, the top, I think MLB had him as the number 28 prospect in all baseball as a 19-year-old. That's insane. So he's a very valuable player. Was he ever going to play for the Cubs? No, probably not. Anyone who's making the point that he's blocked is very on point with that. But those are the kinds of guys that are assets that you turn into a starting pitcher with control. How long have we talked about that on this podcast, where the Cubs needed to, either in the offseason or in the midseason, whenever they had a chance, turn their good assets into a starting pitcher with control? Because after next season, all they have is an aging John Lester and Kyle Hendricks in that rotation. So if you start dealing guys like this for 2 months of a reliever, you're not so much looking at the big picture of contend every single year. You're looking at a small window, and then you're going to have to completely retool and find ways to bring in starters. I just don't like it. I saw, you know, we've talked about this before, Jed Hoyer's comments that I read on the last podcast, which were basically, you know, these kinds of trades are not smart to do, where he was talking about this specific kind of thing, trading a ton of assets to go for it right now, and how that generally doesn't work. I believe that, and I think this runs right in the face of all that, and I don't like it.
Well, Isaac, I'm curious to get your take on this. You've been rather quiet so far. And maybe he will remain quiet.
Isaac.
He's doing Isaac, a Gandhi silent protest.
Yeah, Isaac had to go home to his home planet, apparently.
No, I mean, that's a good point about It's so interesting, right? Because these are when these types of moves get made. That's when we start to kind of speak out of the other side of our mouth about the front office, right? Because we've been lavishing so much praise on them. They're always making the right moves. And so this move, and that's why to me the word that came to mind is bold, just because it's like, and again, we don't know what else is going on. There's been a lot reported on this deal, but who knows what else is going on behind the scenes in terms of how confident they are that they can keep Chapman here, especially if this team, you know, gets deep in the postseason and makes it to the World Series, let's say. I mean, that's got to be some kind of a draw for a guy like Chapman to be on a winning team. I don't know. We don't know, you know, what else is going on there. But in terms of Gleyber Torres, it's funny because, you know, we've talked about him a lot on this podcast, how excited we are about him, his potential, what could be down the line. And now that he's no longer on the team, and it's very easy to rationalize and say, hey, this guy might never make it. He's special now, but how many times have we talked about a number one prospect, let alone a number, you know, whatever you said he was, 20, 30 prospect. And then they don't make it. He's super young. He's got a ways to go. Is he probably going to make it? It sure sounds like it, but you just went and got yourself a guy that's proven it in the major league level and can throw, you know, especially hard like nobody else we've seen in our generation. So, hey, I mean, I'm still kind of stunned by this move. It surprised me, but the team is better off, and like Joel said, those Royals, that Royal bullpen in the playoffs that we, you know, we've seen over the past few years, when you can go 7-8-9 with those arms, it counts for a lot. You know, it feels like the eighth inning when that pitcher is, you know, battling through the sixth inning, because you know, oh, if you can just get through the six, we've got this guy. So, I don't know. I'm still kind of, I don't know if I'm for it, if I like it or don't like it yet. I'm still kind of in the process of sorting through my emotions. All right, I think we've got Isaac back on the line. So, Isaac, let's get your take on this move. And welcome back, by the way.
Thank you. Sorry about that, guys. To be honest, I have major Chapman fatigue from just one day of battling the the eggs on Twitter, and I love you all, and I thank you for listening, but it's been a long day. I despise this move, as I think I made very clear today. Every explanation I've heard of this move, I despise the explanation. I didn't like Theo Epstein's explanation of, if not now, when. It's not a question of when, it's a question of what, and they did not get what they needed for Gleyber Torres. And Ryan, I think you said earlier that they needed controllable starting pitching for him, and absolutely that's correct. There's one thing that can sink this team long term, and it's a lack of controllable starting pitching, and they didn't get it for their best asset that they're willing to move right now. So I think it's an absolutely abhorrible trade. It's one of the worst trades I've ever seen in my life.
Whoa.
I'm loving this right now.
Scalding take.
Tell us what you're looking at.
I think it's worse than the Addison Russell trade that Billy Beane made, because he actually got real assets back and the Cubs didn't. I think that it's a symbolic trade for this team, and unfortunately you got a guy that has a chance to derail the team as much as he does to lift it up symbolically. You're talking about a 2% difference in your World Series odds this year, according to some of the more popular metrics out there. So you just traded one of your best assets for a 2% better chance to win this year and nothing else. There's absolutely nothing to defend about this trade, and frankly, I'm stunned and disappointed that this front office so liberally used precious assets to barely move the needle this year. I think it's completely indefensible, and I'm really stunned and disappointed by it.
I get a feeling that Isaac and I are on an island right now.
You know what? I'm happy to be there.
Drinking a pina colada.
Yeah, let's drink our pina coladas, and you know, we're the sipping tea lizards of this conversation right now.
I love the fact that I'm still, oh, I'm sorting through my emotions. I don't know which way I'm, and this guy's like, boom, I'm way over here. But I want to ask you. I get it. I can totally see this point. What would it take? if Chapman gets extended, if, I mean, is there any room for you to kind of scooch back off the edge on this, or this is it?
Well, a couple of things. One, we'll get into Aroldis Chapman, the person, which is an entirely different thing for me, and something I like even less than what this means in the baseball field, because ultimately baseball is trivial as much as I don't like to make it sound that way. But no, a Chapman extension wouldn't help me very much because the free agent crop is loaded next year. So maybe if he wanted to sign an extension at a discount, but he already came back and said, God willing, he'd be back in New York next year. So I hate it from that standpoint, too. He's basically admitting he's here for 3 months and then back in New York, and that rubbed me the wrong way. Yeah, the only thing that could make this feel a lot better is a World Series at the end of the year, and even then, I don't want to roll this Chapman to be on the mound for that clinching game. So there's a big part of this fun factor of this team that just got slimed all over it, and that hurts for me. I am a fan first and an analyst second, and that hurts for me as a fan.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that point, and that's a very good point. I think I said that last night, and I'm disappointed that you're recycling my points and plagiarizing them, and my lawyer will be calling you in the morning. But in the meantime, you know, I know the figure you're talking about with the percentage increase in their winning the World Series, and this was quoted by The Athletic. It was tweeted. It said, yesterday's Cubs' chances of winning the World Series were 16.6%. Today that number jumped to 19.1%. That's not 2.5%. That's 15%. Because if you go from 20 to 40%, you're not going up 20%. You're doubling. So if you look at it percentage-wise, according to, I'm guessing, Vegas, they have their percentage, their odds of winning the World Series went up 15%. If I'm doing the math right, and I've double-checked that with a few people, so I think that that's right.
You didn't do this in Excel, did you, Joe?
What's that? Do you see what I'm saying?
I do, and I understand that rationale, but that you went from essentially 1 in 6 to still less than 1 in 5. So I definitely see your rationale, but the point is the needle wasn't moved very much. If you want to use it as the denominator rather than the numerator, that's fine. But it doesn't change anything for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could say that you're doubling your chances by going from 1 to 2%, but when you look at 1 to 2%, that's still only moving. If you're looking at you know, a pie and you're cutting it into 100 slices, that's not very much pie to only get one slice, and to get two slices, sure you're getting twice as much pie. That's still not that much.
What kind of pie, though?
It better be good.
It better be pecan, man, because I don't want any cherry, okay? German, let's get that straight.
Pumpkin chiffon pie, gourmet. It's
really, well, I don't know.
I'm listening.
I don't know how those numbers work, but I'm curious, what, like, how much can you even move those numbers? Like, if they would have traded for Mike Trout, like, what would have happened? I don't even know.
Part of my problem here, though, is that you're making trades with long-term assets to try and incrementally move numbers, and I mean,
I get that. That's a totally fair point.
I am terrified of the fact that this team has controlled starters, only two starters beyond 2017, Kyle Hendricks, who I love and think can sustain, and John Lester, who he's been good, but he's definitely getting older. So there aren't controlled assets starting pitching-wise, and one of those that we were hoping for went in this trade, and Adam Warren. I'm not ready to write that guy off yet at all. I'd be willing to bet he turned his career back around in New York. So
yeah, we've only seen a small amount from him. I know Cubs fans, and maybe it's just all fans, but you know, you see, what, 20 innings out of Adam Warren, and you make a determination about who this guy is, despite the fact that he's got 3 years' worth of track record going the other way. It's the same thing as I went on the radio today and was talking about Mike Montgomery and how he could have been a solution in middle relief. But everybody's reaction is just, but look how good that guy is. He came in and gave up a home run. He's had 50 innings in the bullpen prior to that and had like a 2.16 ERA. Don't tell me that's who that guy is.
And did everybody forget that he came in and made a really nice, really pivotal spot start for this team as well right before the break?
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, there's just so much going on here that I don't like, that I feel like was really detrimental to what they need to be doing with their team going forward to be viable for the long term, when what we really saw was what feels like the Cubs basically saying, we feel like we have a 2-year window and then we're going to, you know, blow it up and retool, which I don't mean by blow it up and get rid of everybody, but you know what I mean. Like, they don't feel like this is a long-term, we can move forward with this and go to the playoffs every year. I feel like they're committing to a short window.
Well, I have a question that I'm curious to hear you guys' take, especially Isaac and Ryan, because on this podcast, we've been very positive about this front office, right? Almost every single move, we're behind it. Every little thing, we're on board. So I'm curious to get, you know, your perspective on, from your point of view, obviously being down on this trade, what do you think is going through Theo Epstein and the front office's mind? Obviously, it's not, oh, let's just go for it this year, and who cares about 2017 and 2018, right? Obviously, it's not that. So if you were trying to put some rose-colored glasses on this trade, what do you think is going through, like, in their process when they were looking at this trade and pulling the trigger? What do you think was the logic behind it, knowing this front office?
Well, look, I'm going to speak out of two sides of my mouth here. The first is that they're trying to win a title, and to some degree, I absolve them of that. But if I put on my pessimistic pants here...
Why is it the pants? I don't understand.
Well, because I'm not wearing any, so I got to put
some... No pants on the podcast. Right. Yeah.
So if I put those on, Theo Epstein has long said that he thinks 10 years is the right place to be somewhere. He's been here 5. He's talking about signing another 5-year contract. Gleyber Torres is 19 and is likely blocked for 5 more years. So when I look at this pessimistically, I say, is Theo Epstein maximizing his 5-year window rather than maybe thinking about what's best for the organization for the last... And this is really damning. And
it's
probably more so, but I'm thinking, is he thinking Jed Hoyer's going to move on someday? There are other members of this organization that will get bigger jobs as well, and I'm going to be here for 5 more years. So what am I doing hanging on to assets? Let's try and win today. Now, I still think you should have traded for controllable starting pitching, but as I sit back and think about it, if I was sitting in that chair selfishly, that might come out. That might come into the back of my mind. So
interesting.
I'm not willing to dismiss that necessarily. I don't know. That would never occur to me. I just, given his pattern in Boston, and the way that he patiently rebuilt after winning the first 2 World Series, I don't know if I'd go there. But I'm going to read you, this is what Joe Sheehan said about the trade today. He said, and he kind of addresses some of the things that you've talked about with giving up an asset that could have been used for something else, he said, in so many words. He said, the Cubs paid a lot in talent to get Chapman, and there's an opportunity cost to doing so that they may eventually feel. For where they are now, though, this trade makes them as much more likely to win a playoff series, to win 3 of them, in fact, as any move they could make in this trade market. So that's pretty strong words in favor of it. And I think that my take on it is, like I said before, I just feel like it moves everyone down in the bullpen, and it's, you know, kind of like getting Fowler back. Everyone can kind of slot back maybe to a little more natural role or to a little bit of a lower leverage role, and hopefully take some pressure off the starting pitching. And maybe the fact that you've only got 2 pitchers signed past 2017, maybe Theo does see this as the window. And maybe with that in mind, maybe he's like, screw it, I'm going for it. You know, and despite the fact that he said he wasn't going to do that, maybe that exact thought about this pitching was one of the reasons he did it.
Yeah, and I can't argue with any of that. I'll expand on Isaac's point a little bit and say, hypothetically, if you're talking about Theo looking at 5 more years and making moves as if he's looking out for his own 5 years in the organization, you could also look at it from this point of view, and I'm not necessarily advocating this, but just to add, he's actually only under contract through the end of this season. So you could look at it from the aspect of he's making moves with Cubs assets as if he may not be back after this season. And I've said before, if the Cubs win the World Series, I don't think he is going to be back after this season. And I think that's purposely why they haven't done an extension prior to the end of the season, is I think he's told Tom Ricketts, if we win it, I'm leaving the organization in good hands and moving on to do something else. I don't see any reason why he would want to come back for 5 years at that point. I don't necessarily think that's the case, but if you're looking down, if you want to go down that rabbit hole, there's a lot of things you can talk about there.
Well, yeah, there is, and I don't think that's entirely unreasonable. I tend to think that obviously breaking the curse is his first goal. I think that he'd like to set up a dynasty as well, but I don't think that he considers himself in Chicago for more than 10 years. So, look, it's not really fair to throw out there, and in some ways I regret even doing it, but it entered my mind today, which made me think, well, I mean, it could be out there. And ultimately, I've actually valued Gleyber Torres lower than some people have. But again, I just didn't like the return. I don't think you move the needle very much. I don't think you trade for a rental starting pitcher. I think you got to go get controllable starting pitching. So that's basically where I am after a day full of arguing and fighting about it. Ultimately, I'm just ready to get back to... Yes, Rizzo just tied the game. I'm ready to get back to watching baseball.
Well, there's a couple of things I wanted to add on this. And that's, first off, we talked about this on Slack. I'm curious if Epstein approached any of the veteran guys on the team, and especially in the bullpen, maybe a guy like Travis Wood, to be like, hey, to get a sense of, you know, how would this go down there? Because chemistry is something we've talked about. It's something that gets reported a lot on this team having kind of a special something about it. And I'm assuming he would go and do his due diligence on this and talk to some players. Who knows? Also, Hector Rondon, I mean, I had a piece I was going to write. I don't know if I'm going to write it yet, but I had the headline, and the headline was, what was it? Is it time to stop worrying about Hector Rondon? And it was kind of going to look at his performance, his evolution, kind of, is he ready to take that next step to be the closer for a championship-caliber team? And now this happens, right? And sure, everybody gets bumped down, but does that affect a guy like Rondon? Does it affect a guy like Strope? Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. Other things that I wanted to mention is maybe, you know, the stuff that's happening behind the scenes. And again, here I'm trying to look at it from the point of view of just to take an opposite point of view on, hey, maybe Theo Epstein in the front office are doing this and it's a positive thing because of something we don't know. Like maybe they've had some talks with Arrieta and he's got a sense that, I think we're going to extend him. Maybe he's got a good sense of what they could get for Jorge Soler, a controlled, you know, starting pitcher. Who knows? But I really do feel like this is definitely for the short term. This is a move that is going to help the team this year and maybe only this year, which I agree with Isaac. It's kind of scary if you give this much up just for the one season and then next year you've got to go address all your other holes. With, you know, some of the rest of the talent that you have in the organization. I don't know. But I like talking about it. It's very interesting.
I know we could just go on and on here. I know, I feel like. But
yeah, it is an interesting topic. And I do have to clarify, as down as I am on this and as down as Isaac is on this, I think we all are in agreement that the Cubs are better today than they were yesterday.
Right. Yes.
And it's 100% more clear that they are, you know, do you feel better about their chances in a playoff series than you did yesterday? Maybe slightly, yeah. But I don't think that that justifies the move and how much they gave up. And I think the people who say you're clutching to the prospects when this team is ready to win now, I don't think those people get what we're saying here. What we're saying here is, if you're going to move that prospect, you have to make sure that you get value for him, and I don't think they did.
Yeah, and that's all we're saying. We don't like the value. I mean, I was on the radio 2 days ago saying that I loved the Dan Vogelbach trade. So we're not clutching onto our precious prospect. We're trying to maximize value, and the way you win World Series is by getting into the tournament year after year and maximizing your chances by having a lot of chances. And unfortunately, I think that this type of move limits your ability to have a broad window. I think it limits the window.
All right. So like Joel said, we could sit here and talk about this for hours and hours, but we wanted to address kind of the other issue that comes with acquiring Chapman, not just on the baseball side, but the off-the-field issues that surround him. And there's a lot to talk about here. But I'll start with you, Isaac. You kind of touched on it a little bit in terms of Chapman as a person, you know, what this may or may not do inside the clubhouse. We don't know. We already have seen what this is going to do to some of the, you know, a lot of fans, a lot of people that watch the Cubs have already kind of come out and said, I'm not cheering for this guy. This changes it, the vibe around this team. This used to be this type of team. Now it's this type of team, and it kind of bums me out. How, you know, what's your take on the issues following Chapman and the fact that the Cubs decided to maybe not overlook those issues but accept them and make the trade nonetheless?
Well, I have wide-ranging feelings on this, as I'm sure surprises no one. But first of all, I'll come out and say that when we initially recorded last night, I feel a little bit different than I do right now. My first thought was that Theo Epstein had lost credibility when he has long espoused saying, you know, he's a high character guy. We wanted him because he's a high character guy, whether it be Kyle Schwarber or Ben Zobrist or many of the other acquisitions that he's made. I'm going to back off that statement because this doesn't necessarily mean that Theo Epstein has stopped highly valuing high character guys. Just because I think that Aroldis Chapman is not that does not mean that. This means that Epstein made a calculated decision to go out and make a trade that he thought helped his baseball team, and he decided not to care about it. Now, as for Aroldis Chapman, I'm devastated to see him on this team, and I don't think that he should be in the major leagues. I think he probably belongs in prison for what he did, and I certainly think that he should have been suspended for longer than he was, at least a full season. So, I don't believe he belongs in the big leagues at all. It especially pains me to see him pitch for the Cubs. I don't like that. This is a bit of a personal issue for me, as there's some family history in my extended family with this. So it hits very, very close to home, and I take it very seriously. I don't like it. I don't like that I have to cheer for him. I don't think he should be in the big leagues. And overall, it really taints some of the joy that the 2015 and 2016 teams had been. And maybe that's childish and fanboyish of me to say, but I had enjoyed these baseball seasons more than every other baseball season combined. And that's a little bit tainted for me now.
I don't think it'll surprise anyone that I'm kind of on the same island again with Isaac with this, and maybe Carlos and Joel, you guys are there too. But I think that I agree. I can't get past the idea of what he did without remorse. He finally made a half-assed apology on this topic today when he released a statement, or I'm sorry, his PR people released a statement for him about this. That's not good enough. He basically said, I'm not sorry for what I did when it happened, and that taints anything you do from that point forward. So we're talking about a guy who doesn't realize what he did was wrong, and that's his personality. That's ingrained in him. That is who he is. I can't be okay with people like that. Basically, I mean, he had a 30-game unpaid suspension. He still gets to be a millionaire. He doesn't have to go to prison. He doesn't have to, you know, deal with any of this other than, you know, what he sees, you know, from the media and from fans. I mean, that's all he gets out of this. And I can't justify him being on any baseball team playing because he made no attempt at showing remorse. I'm all for second chances, but this guy has not earned it. So that's where I am with it. I'm not ashamed to say I'm the kind of guy who says baseball organizations don't owe the fans really anything. So if they want to bring in a guy with a checkered past who's trying to atone, at least in his words and actions, for what he's done, I generally will say I'll sit on my hands about it. It's fine. But with this guy, I just can't justify it. I don't like it personally, and it makes it hard for me to root for the team. And I still will root for the team as I normally do, but I just can't justify it.
Well, I'll tell you my initial reaction to the trade, and when I started hearing the rumors, deep down, what I was feeling was, oh no, please no. I don't want to have to, I guess I don't want to have to deal with the question of, oh, you're a fan and you analyze this team, and so what are you going to say about this guy who has this past and all these stories? And I mean, I feel like it's very hard to talk about the issues surrounding him without stepping on a landmine and getting blown up. But I do want to talk about, you know, the fact that, so he's admitted to firing a gun in his garage, however many times, 8, 9 times.
Yeah.
So there's something that he's saying he did. The police say he did it. We know he did it. This sounds like it happened. The issues around what he did to his girlfriend, and I think I'm guessing those are that's the bigger issue here that people kind of have with Chapman. So he's saying nothing happened. Police say, well, I mean, from what I've read, there's no charges, so they're saying we don't have enough to make a case against this guy, right? So here's my issue with talking about this issue. How can so many people have such strong opinions about on either side of this when we as the people so far away removed from this, all we do is read, you know, what somebody else reports, whatever the press release from Chapman's side says, whatever you know, whatever story gets put out there, whatever the police say, but that's what we get. And so that's why my thoughts on this are so gray and so weak. I just can't fall on either side on this, because if he did something like this and I was convinced of it, I would be appalled. This move, I would feel very much like Isaac does right now. And I'm the type of person that to have those strong opinions, I feel like I need to be sure, and it's so hard to be sure with stuff like this. So, and I'll say one other thing about this is, I feel like the issue, and this issue in general, not just in baseball, it's very hard to discuss because everybody has to be politically correct. And so I think a lot of people are scared to kind of put their opinions out there on this, because if you say the wrong thing, it could get twisted into, oh, so you think it's okay to hit a woman. Or on the other side, you know, I don't know. It's just very loaded and very hard to kind of be free with your opinion. But that's kind of where I landed. And it makes me very uncomfortable having him on the team and having to try to sort through all those feelings.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, we talked about this last night too. This creates a certain amount of cognitive dissonance that wasn't there before. You know, before, I mean, the whole concept of fandom is, you know, the classic line about Jerry Seinfeld, you know, that you're rooting for laundry. I mean, you kind of are, right? Like, we can, you know, try to personify, like, Chris Bryant was a great guy, and Anthony Rizzo was really so nice, and, you know, we can, but you really don't know. And so, you know, we rooted for the 2007 team, we rooted for the 2008 team, we're rooting for this team. So you're kind of putting qualities on people that may or may not really be there. But clearly in this case, we know that this is a really messed up situation. I personally, I found it abhorrent what he did, obviously. You know, it seems to me that the only thing that's not in contention is firing a gun 8 times to intimidate her. The mother of his child, whose 4-month-old daughter was in the house.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, so that alone is so loathsome, you know. But I mean, I guess personally, I'm just able to distance myself a little bit from it and just be like, you know, it was a horrible, terrible thing, but I still can root for the team. It is tainted a little bit, you know. I'm not gonna be jumping on my chair when he comes in or strikes out the side in the ninth. But I mean, it kind of changes the dynamic for me. But I'm still able to, you know, be there and root for the team.
Yeah, I kind of want to piggyback on what Joel said. Whether we know what he did, if anything, to his girlfriend, the mother of his child, physically, I don't know if that necessarily matters. I think what we know is he admitted to a loud argument. He said nothing physical, but a loud argument. And then we know that she ended up hiding in the bushes,
right,
outside the neighbor's house while he was firing gunshots trying to intimidate her. Whether there was anything physical that actually happened or not, what Joel said, I'll echo, that's abhorrent. That is somebody who's trying to physically intimidate a loved one. And, I mean, that is domestic violence, whether it was actually physically violent or not. So I can't justify any of that. Not that you were trying to justify it, Carlos. I understand what you were saying. But I can't sit on the fence about that at all and say, you know, we just don't know enough, because I think we know everything we need to know. Whether anything physical actually happened, I don't think is really material in that point.
And you know what? That makes me. There's a couple more things I wanted to add on this. As I was talking, I realized, like I said something about, oh, if I was sure that he did it, and it reminded me of that the NFL incident, right? Where, what was the guy's name?
Ray Rice, I think.
Ray Rice, right?
Yeah.
Where it was like, oh yeah, you know, nobody did anything, and it was just an issue. Oh, who knows what really happened? But as soon as that video came out, everything changed. And I remember feeling like, oh, what hypocrites, the people that only believed until they saw the video. And that's that's kind of how I felt right now when I was saying that. So I don't know. The other thing that struck me right now is Isaac, the way Isaac feels, and how you'd feel too, Ryan, that if this guy is on the mound and he closes out the World Series and he strikes a batter out, the fact that a little bit of joy will have been taken away from you when that happens, if and when that happens, that brings terrible sadness to me. That this, what could be one of the most joyful seasons ever for people that watch the Cubs, that a little part of that could be diminished. That makes me feel really bad.
Yeah, and I appreciate Joel's comments about cognitive dissonance on this topic. And don't get me wrong, I'm going to separate myself from this as much as I can, because, like I said, I'm a fan first, and I'm going to be cheering my heart out for this team, even if, you know, we do get shut down by four starters and the relief core of our beloved team doesn't matter one little iota in the National League Championship Series.
Last year?
Yeah, maybe that happened once. I'm going to be cheering as hard as I can. I will say that there is a part of me that would love to see Hector Rondon get that final out when it happens.
Rather than
Aroldis Chapman.
He's our guy, you know?
He's our boy. Yeah, he's our boy, for sure. Yeah.
Don't you feel like now, like let's say the Cubs are up, you know, 3-0 going to the ninth, and you've got Chapman warming, and then all of a sudden the Cubs explode and get six more runs, and now they're up 9-0 going to the ninth, and Madden sits Chapman down and brings in Rondon instead. Doesn't that make that feel just a little extra good? Like more than it would have been before. That scenario feels so much more satisfying, bringing in Rondon instead of Chapman.
Yeah, if that happens, I want Rossi out there, you know, leading with his fastball, pitching off his fastball.
I still want Javi out there with that 95 mile an hour.
Is that how hard it was?
Javi, yeah,
from
Javi.
Shortstop. I think it was 90. I think it was 98 actually.
Yeah, it was like
the 90, legend is growing.
It was like 96 miles an hour from shortstop to home plate without winding up.
Yeah. And we know for sure, right? I mean, it sounds like everything I'm reading is that he's definitely going to be the closer. This isn't going to be like Joe Maddon saying, "Ooh, high leverage situation, alert in the seventh inning, bases loaded, two tough guys coming up."
I've heard that he will kind of move him around. I think he's open to Maddening it.
That means probably not.
Yeah, I think he's the closer. Unfortunately, I'd love to see him actually manage it by situationally manage it intelligently, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's too much dogma here still.
I liken it to when Carlos Marmol was good, the way they used him, whether it be like oh, well, it's bases loaded, nobody out in the sixth inning, so let's bring Marmola in. And, you know, he'll strike everybody out, and maybe next time we use him in the eighth inning. That is how I would like him to be used. But yeah, you're right. It's going to be a much more strategic, you know, now Pedro Strop is the seventh inning guy, and Hector Rondon is the eighth inning guy, and, you know, Chapman in the ninth.
Mm-hmm. I'm afraid you're right.
Which is disappointing. If they have to do it, if he has to be here, I would prefer they do it in the most intelligent way possible. But
yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, for as much as I've been railing on it, and I have been all day, and I'm not going to back away from that probably ever, because even if the results are excellent this year, it doesn't justify the trade. I'm getting that out there beforehand. But the bullpen is loaded now, and you could have some really fun, you know, scenarios and situational matchups if Madden so chose, but I just don't see that happening.
And to get back to the issue here, the domestic violence issue, I mean, is there anything you think fans can do to kind of show their displeasure with this? Is it not watching? Is it not buying tickets? Is there anything people can do to kind of take a stand against this move if they feel as strongly as Isaac does? Or is this just, hey, this doesn't matter what you do or don't do. Executives are going to do what they do, and players like this are going to keep playing.
No, I don't really think there's anything that people can do. I mean, people are going to do things. I've seen plenty of people.
Other than Twitter.
Yeah, plenty of people who are going on Twitter tirades who are very upset, and I sympathize with those people for how upset this makes them. It breaks my heart that it breaks the heart of so many people that I care about. Whether it affects me to that level or not, I still recognize that it does affect other people that way. So I see that they're upset. Even if they boycott and say they won't go to games, I mean, we know that's not going to change anything. The Cubs don't lose a dollar. Their team gets better on the field. The people who are upset about this are very much outnumbered by the people who are basically just don't care or unaffected by it.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's really much we can do. And honestly, in many ways, if, you know, theoretically, if there was something that I did, and I I dislike the move strongly from both the baseball side and the personal domestic violence side for Chapman. But the only thing that I could do, like you said, is stop following the team or boycott it, which ultimately would just, you know, further the damage for me personally, and I think for people that feel the same way. So ultimately, I'm going to sleep on it a couple of nights and get over it and, you know, come out the other side and get excited about a stretch run.
Well, it's a deep topic. It's a hairy one. Do you guys have any other details or issues that you wanted to kind of bring up on Chapman before we move on to 60 seconds?
Nope, I'm tired.
You know what, that's how I feel about this whole thing, is like from last night to now, it's just like, all right, let's play some baseball.
Yeah, this has been an exhausting day and an exhausting last 2 days keeping up on this and writing about it and radio and podcasts and the whole thing. It's been just an exhausting topic, and I'm ready for the Cubs to not lose games in the ninth inning to the White Sox.
Tyler Saladino coming through.
There are so many reasons the Cubs should have won this game tonight. Number one, first and foremost, is the home run that got hit that was brought back by Melky freaking Cabrera. That's just kind of like the ultimate insult to injury for Cubs fans, having to deal with both sides of why this trade sucks and then that Melky Cabrera robbing that home run and the Cubs lose by one run. Like, and Chris Bryant just forgetting how to run the bases.
Yeah, two Toot Blands tonight.
One of them trying to take second base with nobody out in the ninth inning trailing by one. Like, come on, dude.
Well, before we move on to 60 seconds, I wanted to take a quick poll from you guys. His first appearance at Wrigley Field, Chapman gets more boos or more cheers?
Oh, cheers by a long shot. Yeah.
Cheers, because really? everybody's an asshole.
Wow. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. But Joel, give us something uplifting. 60 seconds, please. Bring us out of this pit of despair.
Oh, I'll do what I can. So because we have been talking about a closer all night, I thought that I would go back to everyone's favorite Cub closer of all time, Joe Borowski.
Oh,
right?
Jobo.
Right? Yes. You know, it's funny. I thought he had a nickname, but he doesn't. Like on Baseball Reference, it says nickname, Joe.
That's actually a perfect nickname for him.
I always called him Sweaty Joe, and I guess I said it I said it so much I thought that it had caught on.
But... I didn't know you knew him on a personal basis.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, so you just, he had nothing. You know, like the nothing like the Polish hammer or something that's like run as the Hebrew hammer. So, yeah. But anyway, Joe Borowski, here we go. Ready?
Ready? Go.
Let's take our mind back to 2003, shall we? There were many astonishing things happened that year, and one of the most incredible was the man who closed out 33 games for the Cubs, Joe Borowski. Borowski was a 32nd round draft pick, and I don't know what makes him more unlikely a key part of a playoff team. His decidedly unsvelte frame packed ungracefully into the number 48 uniform. His nervous eyes were a combination of terrified man clinging to a sinking boat and a coked up drug dealer sneaking to customs with a suitcase full of Peruvian flake.
My goodness.
And a thick sheen of sweat that covered him from the moment he took the hill. The guy could have been trying to mow down a Yeti in the North Pole and he'd still be sweating like Nixon in a sauna. Borowski broke his hand on a comeback of the following year, then was released by the Cubs. He went on to do pretty well, saving 36 games for the Marlins in 2006 and 45 for the Indians in 2007. For a guy whose four-seam fastball topped out in the low 90s at best, well, hats off to Sweaty Joe.
Nice.
So I just have to tell a story. Last night we attempted to record in the middle of the rampant rumors about Aroldis Chapman, but the storms knocked out the internet in Ryan's house, I think. So we weren't able to capture that. But what word did you drop to define Hector Villanueva again?
Zoftig.
Zoptic, which we found out was a rotund female, specifically female.
Yeah,
but
I didn't realize it was gender specific, so I feel bad.
Zoptic, Zaftag, right? Yeah.
Yep, it's German.
I have to throw this out there for if you follow Cubs people on Twitter, it's almost assured that you follow Cubs Den, which is John Arguello.
Yeah.
Shortly after the game started tonight, he said, "I have this overwhelming feeling of dread that if the Cubs lose this game, J.B. Shuck is going to have something to do with it."
Oh, man. And he did. He scored the winning run.
Yeah, and I saw the notification. After reading that earlier, I saw the notification from MLB.tv on my phone that J.B. Shuck scored the winning run.
He's terrible at tap baseball, if any of you have played that. I went like 0 for 47 with him at one point.
Yikes.
I remember Joe Borowski got a chance to even come up because he put together like a ridiculous string at Iowa of just insane starts, and that's what eventually got him called up.
Yeah, he actually he came up as a starter in 2001 and pitched one game as a starter.
I remember.
It was awful, and I want to say he gave up some milestone home run to Barry Bonds. It's possible it was his 50th of the season that year, and I want to say that was his career high at that point because he had hit 49 a year before, 2 years before. It was something like that. It was like Barry Bonds, like his career high home runs at the time.
It was a good story, a guy coming out of virtually nowhere to become a closer for a few years.
You know, he had, 120 saves over his career, and it just Midland stuff at best, but somehow he made it work.
So. Yeah, it was like a whole lot of luck and elbow grease, I think.
Yeah. Well,
glad that the Cubs had a premium closer that year to take them to the promised land.
Yeah. Don't ever forget that blown lead in game one of the NLCS.
All right, Ryan, what do we got for our question of the week? I'm pretty sure I know what it's related to.
Yes, I decided that instead of taking a question from the fans this week, that I would use the BP WrigleyCast Twitter account to ask the fans a question. And I set up a poll that now is basically over. The question was, based on what we know, because at the time we didn't know if Chapman was being traded or not or what the whole return was, but we had heard Torres, in your personal opinion, do you like the Cubs trading for Aroldis Chapman? And I left that open-ended for several reasons. One, we didn't know the whole return. Two, there were still rumors at the time that there might have been an extension with that. And three, I wanted people to give their opinion based on however they wanted to view it. If you wanted to look at it as baseball only and say, I root for laundry, then fine. Tell me if you like it because you don't give a shit about, you know, domestic violence. If domestic violence is like number one in your book and you can't get it behind it, I want to know that. And so we got 575 votes on this thing. And 42% said they do like the trade. 34% said no, and 24% not sure yet. So 42% is the majority on this specific poll. We've got, you know, what, 58% saying basically either no or maybe not. So I think those numbers are interesting. I feel like that aligns with how we felt about it overall. If you take all the aspects in between the four of us, I think I'd say we range anywhere from hate it to unsure about it. So I feel like that's pretty representative of what I've seen. What do you guys think?
When you said it was when you said it was 42%, I thought you were going to say it was 58% were in favor, and that would have surprised me. But I think that sounds about right, because I think you're getting people who are, you know, who feel very strongly opposed, and they just came out with no, and then some people are just kind of unsure. And I think I'm guessing, maybe cynically, that those people will be, you know, the first time he comes in and strikes out the side, you know, 28% of that, whatever the number was, 32%, I think, will migrate over to in favor of the trade. And within a couple weeks, it will just be he's on the team and that's that.
That's a good point. I think so too. And that's one thing I actually don't really get about Chapman is if this guy threw 96 and had the same results, would everybody feel the same way about him? And
absolutely not. He'd be left-handed Hector Rondon.
Yeah, exactly. And
exactly who he would be.
That's what really gets me about it is, so much of it is sort of trading for celebrity and trading for glitz and glam.
The cartoon, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what gets me is there's no real value there. It's just it is what it is. He still allows what he allows. He's not infallible. But to be honest, Ryan, I'm surprised that close to 60% had a middling or negative opinion of it, but that might be somewhat indicative of our listenership as well, where, you know, they do sort of align with the general way of thinking about baseball that we do.
I will say it this way. I saw that after I retweeted it, somebody that I am friends with, I think maybe some of you guys may know, and people who listen to the podcast may know him on Twitter. His name is Manu. He quote tweeted it and said, I can't believe 52% of the people are in favor of this. And when I checked the poll later, it had dropped to 40%. So down from 52 at that time saying yes to then to 42% saying yes. That means a lot of the people were more in favor of it until people who follow him on Twitter saw it and started voting for no. So it all depends on what your audience is and who you're talking to. But it was very even for a while, at least.
Well, let's close this out with some non-Aroldis Chapman chatter, unless by some miracle you've got him with an at-bat, Isaac.
I don't, but...
Is C.J. Edwards batting against Aroldis Chapman from last year?
I was just going to see if Carlos, you wanted to take another super accurate stab at the end of the week this week.
I think I'm going to bow out on this one.
All right. Well,
what sack fly is it?
Yeah.
Shut up.
Fun.
So I have to tell you, my brother texts me the next day and goes, dude, you've got to admit, man, that Ross sack fly was pretty big.
Hey, I like him already.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go with the affable, lovable, cancer-surviving first baseman for the second week in a row, Anthony Rizzo. This came in last night's game. The Cubs entered the top of the seventh inning, losing 4-1. The inning started by Miguel Montero singling up the middle off Hernan Perez. Matt Caesar then reached on a force attempt, forcing Miguel Montero a second before Tommy La Stella doubled. Actually, let me back up. Matt Caesar, the ball was kicked by the second baseman, so they both reached. It was Caesar and Montero, first and second, nobody out. La Stella doubled to Hernan Perez in right field. Montero scored, setting the stage for Chris Bryant with men on second and third, and the Cubs down 4-2. Bryant got ahead in the count, and eventually Will Smith just decided to intentionally walk him, which Bryant's looked a little bit messed up since the All-Star break, and I didn't love that move from the Brewers' perspective. I thought that they probably should have tried to attack Bryant instead of going to Anthony Rizzo, but they didn't do that. They intentionally walked Bryant, which brought up Rizzo. He got to 1-2 pretty quickly, and it didn't look really good. Will Smith was throwing some excellent pitches before getting to 2-2, and then Bryant, or Rizzo fouled off a pretty tough pitch, still 2-2. And then Will Smith threw an 80-mile-an-hour slider exactly where he wanted to on the outside corner just below the knees. And Rizzo fought it off and hooked it into the right center field gap to clear the bases, score three runs, and give the Cubs a 5-4 lead. They would eventually go on to win 6-5. So Anthony Rizzo for the second week in a row is your at-bat of the week, a three-run double off Will Smith.
We should be tracking who gets... which players accumulate the most at-bats of the week.
Yeah, good point.
Rizzo's got a lot of them, and honestly, there was a while there where he went 4 or 5 in a row where he came in second, like 4 times in a row. So he's got several firsts and several seconds. He has been awfully clutch.
He's amazing.
And it's just because we shamed you so much that it was always Addison Russell, so I think you moved off of him because reluctantly, but tell me I'm wrong. Tell me
yeah, you're wrong, because I'm not ashamed of my deep affection and never will be.
Okay, all right.
I think it's fun that I spoke earlier about Cubs fans and their willingness to jump to conclusions based on small samples that they've seen about players, ignoring things that they may have done prior. And I mentioned Adam Warren and Mike Montgomery, and in our comments, Joel on the side says, Montgomery not looking great so far, alas. And that you didn't go as far as you could have with that, but it still kind of made me chuckle.
I mean, I know it's a small sample size, but I mean, he gave up a 3-run homer last night and he, you know, the winning run tonight. So, you know, I'm not saying that this is going forward, he sucks and whatever, but it is a bummer, certainly, that his first two appearances not exactly been, you know, Mordecai Three Fingers Brown.
Yeah. And not to go too far back on Chapman, but I do really feel like this move, because of the Cubs' record and holding leads late in games and how good they've been at doing it, the domino effect, they're essentially trading for Chapman to get the upgrade between C.J. Edwards and Pedro Strop over whatever middle reliever they had. And I felt like Montgomery and Joe Nathan and whatever, you know, Trevor Cahills that they tried to pick up, the or Fernando Rodneys of 2015, those guys could have done that job perfectly fine, and you would not have had to trade away one of your best assets.
I think that's a wrap.
Well, I do want to say to the listeners.
I'm just, like, spent.
To the listeners, let us know. Like, reach out to us, Twitter, on email. I've already forgotten the email. bpreallycast@baseballprospectus.com. We enjoy hearing from you, especially on episodes like this one where there's a lot to kind of unpack there. So find us on Twitter, and thanks for listening, and let's get back to baseball. Good night, guys.
Good night, Carlos.
Thanks.